Well, hello everybody. Here we are again. Another week's gone by. We're into number six. We're flying. We're up and running. We're off. Out the traps. Can't believe we're here. It's absolutely great to be back and chatting to you all again. As way as introductions go, I am Ian. I am 54 years old and I will be 6 years alcohol free in May of this year. And I've been thinking to myself lately about, I remember when I was in year one and year two, and we can talk to our guest about this today. I remember people in years three, four, five, and six saying, oh, life just gets better and better. And I can't believe that things are just getting better now that I don't drink. And I thought, how can they get better than this? As in, not because life was brilliant, but I just couldn't see how there could be a material shift in sort of how things go. But they do, as far as I'm concerned, they do keep getting better. I just feel a lot more sort of content, relaxed, grateful, comfortably my own skin, all those other buzzwords that we're going to bring out in today's show, because we love a good buzzword. So that's me. I'm going to introduce you to my pal, Kelly. Hello, Kelly. How are you doing?
Hi, Ian. I'm good. Nice to be here again. I can't believe actually how much I enjoy doing the podcasts. I mean, when you said to me about doing it, I was like, away you go. There's no chance I'm doing the podcast. And I really enjoy it now. I just love chatting to our community members and guests. So I'm 43 years of age, and I'm just so grateful to be sober and so happy to be sober. I was thinking today, 7 months ago to today, the 13th, Friday the 13th, I was in rehab celebrating my birthday, and I just thought, oh God, like, it just felt like the world was ending. And then now I'm recording a podcast. I'm so grateful for my sobriety. I'm just over 5 months sober, but I had all that time when I was in the community over the influence, where I was like 10 months sober, 16 months sober, and you just learn to enjoy sobriety so much. And it's about kind of not letting yourself stay down if you get knocked down, because there's so much more out there. I mean, if I'd have just gave up, I wouldn't be doing this lovely stuff that I'm doing now. I'm feeling really grateful this week for lots of reasons, but mainly for my sobriety, because without that, I wouldn't have any of this. So I'm good.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad. I like the way you started that, talking about the, I like the way you ended it as well, but I love the way you started it, talking about the doing these podcasts, because we've said, haven't we? We were absolutely doing things with bricks, weren't we, when we first started, as in we were very nervous and I think we didn't really quite know how it was going to go. We didn't know whether we were going to be able to conduct ourselves appropriately and stuff. But I think it's going well and I'm really enjoying it. And I was going to say there, I don't care whether people listen. That's not true. I do care if people listen. I really do. I really hope that the whole idea of doing these is to get people within the community, isn't it? And even if they're not, actually, no, it's not even just that. Even if they don't want to join the community, that's absolutely fine. Raising awareness of, you know, the benefits and dangers, if we can say that, of not drinking, but focusing on the benefits, shall we say. But I'm loving doing it. I look forward to sort of like, you know, having these chats and just, I feel good. I feel nervous, like now I'm still nervous, but when I come back, I think, that's good. And then when I listen back, I think, hey, that even through my own ears, my own very critical ears, that doesn't sound too bad, you know?
I think as well, it's like when you're in this space, you're just like, you forget how well people have came on and how much their lives have improved by removing alcohol. And then you sit down and you have a chat and you start to look at whoever we're chatting to's life from when they were drinking to when they're not drinking. And it just fills you with so much joy. And then you just think, well, if that's filling me with joy, whoever's listening to this is guaranteed they're going to get something from it, some sort of hope or joy. That's the way I think about it.
Yeah, we're actually quite lucky, aren't we? Because we've got a back catalogue of people, if you like, within the community, and also contacts that we've made, you know, over the last few years that you and I have known each other, and we've you know, come into contact with other Zoom guests from over the influence, for example, people who we can hopefully reach out to and get on here. And I think we've got a great back catalogue of both people from within and outside of the community to talk to. And they all bring something sort of different. So isn't it? We better be careful that we could go off on a massive tangent, couldn't we? And forget we've got somebody very important, the third person on the screen who we need to introduce and we need to talk to. But I'm in the same place as you, Kelly. I'm just feeling quite grateful that we've got the chance to do this. And Yes, I'd love to get more people into the community. I hope people are enjoying it. And even if it doesn't, it means that they don't join the community, that's also great. But selfishly, I'm enjoying chatting to you and in chatting to our guests. So it's win, win, win. Right, shut up, Ian, and introduce the guest. Right. So today we have got somebody who is not a Zoom host, is within the community, but is not a Zoom host. So, because I think the people who have been listening to these from the start, I've probably thought, is everybody a Zoom host in Uncensored? Is anyone just a member in the community? Yes, we do have many, and we've got a prime example of somebody who I think the emphasis today should be on how right it can go when you give it your all, if you know what I mean, when you really get stuck in and try properly to change things around. We've got with us today, we've got Becky, who is. I made the mistake beforehand, I don't mind full disclosure, of thinking Becky was 18 months alcohol-free, and it turns out no, she's 23 months alcohol-free, and she is 24 months next month. So, hello, Becky, how are you? And welcome to the podcast.
Hi guys, thank you for having me. It's really nice to be
Absolutely
here, see your
welcome.
smiley faces.
Absolute pleasure. I've been really looking forward to this chat. I love your alcohol-free journey and the kind of ripple effect that it's had in terms of all the good stuff that you're picking up along the way, and it's kind of having a ripple effect on the kids, which is just, it just makes me smile from ear to ear, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, it really has. Yeah.
Becky, do you mind what we tend to do on these, the format, the way it tends to be going is we talk about what people's lives were like before they decided to stop drinking. And you can go back as far as you want, or you can sort of condense it or focus on just the front section, if you know what I mean. But tell us a bit about your family life and your home life and your background, Becky, because I think that's relevant to the story as well. And then tell us a bit about your drinking.
Okay, so I'm 54, same age as you, Ian. I live in Derbyshire and I'm married with two children who I was quite late having. I had my children in my 40s. So that has played a major part actually, because being an older mum, you're very aware that you want to be healthy and well. And I think that has driven a lot of this journey. But actually, early on, I mean, if I started back to my teens, I just did the normal teen type drinking like everybody did. And then in my 20s and 30s, I practically didn't drink at all. So with a lot of people, it kind of progresses over the decades. But with me, it didn't. So in my 20s, I wasn't that bothered. In my 30s, I was quite health conscious and I did a lot of dieting and there was absolutely no room for calories. So alcohol just didn't feature at all. And then towards the end of my 30s, my dieting became more of disordered eating. And that's when I started to sometimes use alcohol, like on socials, if it involved food and eating. And that caused a lot of anxiety for me. So I realized pretty quick that if I had a couple of drinks and then went on that social, my brain didn't mind eating. I wasn't getting so stressed about the whole eating event. So it started to creep in just a little bit then. And around the same time, late 30s, early 40s, I changed, well, yeah, about 40, I changed to a quite a stressful job. And then I used to come home and get a bottle of wine on the way home, just as a really quick way of de-stressing. So where I was in a lesser job before and it was quite easy to go out for a walk after work and things like that, suddenly I was working longer hours. And I think, oh, it's fine, I'll just have a couple of glasses of wine when I get in, because that relaxes me really easily. So that became a little bit of a habit. But then it wasn't huge amounts, and everybody around me would never say it was an issue, and I never thought it was an issue at all at that point. And then I had my children, which was a really wonderful welcome surprise in my early 40s. So I went through another few years of not drinking again. Because I was having my kids. And then we hit lockdown. So once we were in lockdown and we were all in every evening forever, that's when we used to, like, my husband and I would share a bottle of wine, like several nights a week. And it wasn't huge amounts. And I remember saying to one of my friends, "Oh, I've drunk quite a few nights this week." And she said to me, "Well, yeah, that's pretty normal, isn't it?" And I suppose because it wasn't a huge amount and it was only a few weeks,
everyone around me seemed to be doing the same. So I thought, yeah, it's quite normal. But there was just something ticking away that was thinking, actually, this is more than I'm used to doing. But I never really did anything about it. It just kind of, when you just kind of go on, don't you? Just go on thinking, right, I'll just go with it because that's what everybody's doing. And then I remember somebody mentioning that alcohol caused cancer. And honestly, I must have been so naive, but I had no idea that alcohol increases your risk of cancer. And I think that's one of the key things that sowed the seed that I perhaps would like to cut down. I never planned on quitting. I just thought, right, I could really do with cutting back. But then I found it quite hard. It's like you're in a routine, you're in a habit, everybody's doing it around you. And that idea just kept getting shelved. And I just thought, oh, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. And then my mum became really, really sick. She was terminally ill and she lives quite a few hours, or she lived quite a few hours away from me. And it was really important that I was able to be contacted and go down there at any time. But I still, of an evening, would just open a bottle of wine with my husband because I was really struggling with what was going on. And I'd put the children to bed and I'd just think, oh, let's just have a bottle of wine. I'm sure it'd be fine. But that kind of, I knew in my mind that that wasn't fine. It's like, why do I know that I need to be available? So why is it that every morning I wake up and think, right, I'm not going to drink tonight because I might have to drive. But come the evening, I just opened a bottle of wine. And I really felt then, oh, I ought to just stop. I ought to take a break. Never give up, just take a break. But again, I didn't because it was hard. So I just kept going. And my mum died in 2022. And fortunately, I got that phone call in a morning. So I was able to drive down and be with her. But it really, really played on my mind that it could have been so different, that I might not have been with her. And I struggled with that. And that happened right at the start of the school summer holidays. So I had my children off school and I was trying to hold all my emotions together during the days because I wanted to give them a good summer. And then by the time the evening came round and I put them to bed, the grief that I was feeling was just overwhelming. And I didn't want to deal with it. So I just would open a bottle of wine with my husband. And that's how I spent the evening. Just again, not huge amounts. We'd share a bottle and then that would be it. But the next day, the cycle would repeat. I'd hold everything in for the children. Then I'd put them to bed. And then I just couldn't deal with the emotion. So off we went again. And I think it wasn't till, so that was in the August, and it wasn't till the following January that I decided that that's it, enough is enough. I need to take a break. I'm going to do a dry January. And that's when I properly started my journey of cutting back and listening to tons of podcasts and researching. I think I'd kind of got my head together, and the turn of the year was like, right, this is it. Now I really, really want to do something here. I want to take a break. And that's when I started to change things. Sorry, that was a lot, wasn't it? That was a
No, it
lot.
wasn't. No, you just no. I don't think you could have made it any shorter without sort of, missing bits out, if you know what I mean. That's a good summary of the task that you were given, Peggy. Spot on. It was what you said towards the end there was quite interesting. It made me think of like my situation when you see your parents passing away. My mum died just over 2 years ago, and she had quite severe dementia from Alzheimer's. And she had her own sort of drinking history, if you like, as well. When you're seeing somebody very close to you pass away, and you're also aware of your own mortality, and yet you're drinking more and more, there's a real conscious link, isn't there, between the two? You think, I'm doing something here, which is really essentially you could not could, it's damaging my health. And I've also I'm aware of sort of my mortality through my the loss of parents, or whatever, and yet I'm still doing it. I'm still doing it, and that rankles, doesn't it? And it keeps sort of coming back. And I think that's what made me stop. It was, my mum was still alive when I decided to stop drinking, but sadly the dementia was quite advanced, and it had been exacerbated by the drinking. What I'm trying to say is I don't think you put the two and two together initially, but that's a big catalyst, I think, for wanting to stop drinking. Have I made sense, and do you
Yeah,
agree?
totally. It was like, Yeah, because I just kept thinking, you know, I was 50 when my mum died, and I thought, well, I wasn't ready for her to go. And I've had my children in my 40s, and I already know that I won't be around as long for my children. I might not be around as long for my children as my mum was for me. And if I wasn't ready at 50, then why would I want to risk my health and bow out early for my kids? You know, so
Yeah.
it really did make me very, very aware that I wanted to make a positive change that was going to
Yeah.
hopefully keep me here as long as I possibly can. And I just kept thinking, you know, we can't help always what's coming to us, but I didn't want to be sat in a consultant room being told that maybe I had a type of cancer that potentially I could have reduced the risk of getting. I didn't want to have to say that to my children, you know, I've got this, and potentially I brought this on myself, or I added to the risk of this. I don't want to be in that situation.
I think as you're listening to you, Becky, I mean, it's like the awareness you've had throughout it all, but that I could just feel when you were talking, I could feel that division of what you were going through at the time. Like, I know this isn't serving me well, but it's making me feel better tonight. And there's so many parents out there that are, they want to be good parents and they get through the day as best they can and provide for their kids. But it comes to at night time and they've got this quick fix that's advertised and encouraged everywhere we look. And it does give you that, we say it all the time, it gives you that ease and comfort, but it's been able to step out of it and look at the bigger picture. And I just think the courage that you've had and been able to take a break and then remove it all together before it progressed. Because like we always say, it is progressive, and you could see kind of the different, how the behaviours had changed a little bit in terms of you were surprised that you were having a glass of wine, even though you knew that you would maybe have to drive if you got a phone call for your mum, or wouldn't be able to drive. And it's like having that awareness, that you could see it changing, like probably 2 years previous to that, that maybe wouldn't have been a thing. Do you
Yes,
know where I'm going with that?
it's totally, it's progressive. And I remember where once my husband and I would have shared a bottle of wine, but then at the point where I wanted to stop or certainly take a break, we'd have a bottle of wine and sometimes open another one. You know, and I think that is how it goes, isn't it? That over time, you know, if I hadn't stopped at this point now, the however many years later, where would we have been now? And I remember putting my children to bed. And one night, and my eldest son said to me, he was asked, they ask lots of questions at bedtime, don't they? And he said, "Mummy, what's freedom?" And my instant thought was, freedom is not thinking about walking downstairs and opening a bottle of wine. And after I'd put them to bed that evening, I walked downstairs and I wrote the word freedom on a piece of paper, and I'd magnetized it to my fridge so that every time I'd to go to the fridge, I'd see that word, and it would make me think, that's what freedom is to me right now. This is what I need to do.
It's like we say all the time as well. I mean, you weren't drinking massive amounts, but it was too much for you. And I think that's where a lot of people are kind of have that battle of, well, everyone's drinking like this, and I'm only having this, and I'm only having that. But if you're spending that time thinking of all those things, then you're doing yourself an injustice by not trying to take a break and stop that noise in your head, aren't you?
Totally. And there was a lot of mental chatter going on. You know, I've got a busy brain. My brain is always really busy, which potentially is a reason why I would use drink to you know, de-stress at the end of the night, because my brain is always, you know, going 10 to the dozen. But what I hadn't realized is that it was causing so much anxiety as well. So like, I used to have this awful run of things, like after we drank one night, and I never put these two things together, but for days afterwards I'd feel all right, hungover the next day or a bit out of it. But like about 3 or 4 days later, I'd feel really anxious, like the world was going to end, or you know, something really bad was about to happen. I'd feel awful knot in my stomach, where I just say, oh my God, like this impending feeling of doom. And it wasn't until I removed alcohol that I realized that I didn't have that anymore. And you don't put these things together until you stop, and then you suddenly think, well, hang on a minute, I haven't only lost the hangover, but for the days that follow that, I'm actually feeling pretty good. But you just don't tie it together. And it's not until you take a break, which I must say was really hard, because in that January, I decided to do Dry January, and I literally lasted 2 weeks and then gave up. Sort of, this is hard, I'm not going to do this. Well, I think I half thought this is hard, and I half thought, well, I've done 2 weeks, so I'm obviously fine. And you kind of give yourself a reason to think, oh, we have no point doing the end of the month. But then I did try again the following month, and then I tried again and again and again, and eventually I drank less and less and less and less until I got to the August, and I actually did the month, and I thought, oh my God, finally, we've got to August. I've made it to the summer, and I've got a dry month on the Try Dry app. And I was so excited about it. It was huge. It felt massive to me. And I was just so elated, and I thought, I actually feel really good. I actually feel great. I'm going to keep this going. Which I did. I managed to do, I think I did 4 months that time. I did really good. And then I decided that it would be a good idea to share a bottle of wine with my husband, because I think part of it, and I don't know if other people feel like this, I'm sure they do, but because I used to drink with my husband and then I'd stopped, I always felt a bit bad for him that he'd lost his drinking partner. And you kind of think, well, every so often I really ought to maybe have a drink with him, because he doesn't get to do this anymore. Not that he ever said, oh, I really miss this. He never said anything at all. And I've subsequently found out that's because he's actually not that bothered to drink, and I was the instigator, and it actually wasn't him at all. But I think, oh, I'll just share a bottle of wine with him, and then that'll be really nice. But what I found was that I'd done so much researching and podcasting and learning about all the health harms of alcohol and all what it does to your brain, that on that occasion when I had that wine, all I was thinking about was Andrew Huberman saying about how it's going through the blood-brain barrier, and and oh my gosh, I'm feeling like I want a second drink now because William Porter has said this, that, and the other. And the joy was gone. The joy was completely gone, because I knew what was happening to my body and my brain whilst I was drinking. But and then the next day I thought, that's it, I'm going back on the sober train. And then 3 months later I did the same again, but it literally was just sharing that bottle of wine and then stopping. And
Tell us a bit about the early days of when you joined OTIN and how you found it. Obviously, it's one thing sort of listening to podcasts and doing everything offline, and I think it's probably, without putting your words in your mouth, I think when you're offline, if you like, that's when it's easier to keep blipping and tripping and finding excuses just to sort of get derailed. But how did you find it, both good and bad, if you know what I mean, when you first joined?
There was no bad. There was no bad to it at all. So when I joined OTI, I'd had a few blips, and then I was back on, not drinking. And I think I was about 5 months when I joined. So getting to that point was all right, because I'd already done a few stints, and I was, doing that on my own. But I don't know what it was really that made me join a community. I was listening to the podcast and I thought, oh, do you know what? I'm just going to give it a go, and I'll do it for a month and then I'll stop. But there is something so wonderful about being around other people that are doing the same. And there was nobody in my life that wasn't drinking. So when I came on and met all you guys, it was just that feeling of belonging. And just, when I'm celebrating, like, oh, another 30 days. And everyone, you knew by people's reactions that they completely understood how important those 30 more days were, or those months. Or, if you come on, I don't know if you remember, Ian, I think my first Zoom with OTI was with you, and I probably came on and just cried,
Do
because there's
I
something,
remember the tears.
there's something so nice about, or yeah, no, it was nice. It was nice. Where someone comes on and they say, right, well, explain, talk about whatever you want to talk about, and it's fine. And you know that all of these people are really listening to you, and they completely understand. And I think the minute I started talking, and you look at all those faces on the screen, and you can just see they're so accepting and understanding, and the emotion just goes wild, doesn't it? So I think for the first however many Zooms that I did with OTI, I just cried my way through them. But in a good way, because it was lovely. I came off and felt like I'd been in a counselling session. It was great. And then as the time goes on, you get to know people's characters. It's just lovely, because I just have mixed with people that I would not meet in my everyday life. The different kinds of people. I mean, I know I've laughed with you, Ian, about it when we've been out on a meet up. Said it's like being in the Masons. Literally, doesn't matter what happens in your life, there's somebody where you think, I know somebody in the community that will know something about that. And it's just the best thing. It's just full of great characters, full of laughs. It's really funny, really understanding. But when you do have a wobble or somebody else has a wobble, to have any information you can share or you can help them with or them in return, there's nothing like it. There's just nothing like it. It's a great place.
What I love, Becky, is about it's just you're kind of honest and so upfront about it was difficult. Because it's like I think people are scared to say that it was difficult because then that might mean that they've had a problem. It is difficult. And I just love how much you own it and you're like, it was really hard. Is that something you speak about outside the community, or is that just a conversation that you would have? Like, would you say to people in your outside life, I found it difficult?
I would now. To start with, I think because I just thought I would just fail. I didn't say much to anybody. I think as the months went on, I was more open in saying I'm taking a break. But I almost felt apologetic. So I'd go somewhere, and if I wasn't drinking, I'd have to have this, oh, what am I going to say? What am I going to say? And how am I going to explain it? And whereas now I don't care. I just wouldn't think to say it. And then if someone mentions it, I think, oh, yeah, I don't drink, do I? It doesn't occur to me. But in the early months, you feel like you're walking around just flashing with, I'm not drinking, don't you, above your head all the time. It feels like a massive thing. So now I would certainly talk about it. And if anyone asks, I'm more than happy to say, yes, it's really hard, but it's not impossible. And you just need to be around the right people. And you just need to make it normal. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you drink loads, it doesn't matter if you drink just a tiny bit. If you want to take a break, and you're struggling, just join a community or talk to me because, you know, I can talk about being alcohol-free till the cows come home. I love, love, love it. So, you know, I'm always really enthusiastic to have a conversation with anybody who will listen, really, about not drinking because I love it.
Yeah. And I think that'll be really comforting to people that are just kind of starting out because I think you do think, God, is it like this either a big secret or am I the only one that's feeling this or not drinking or feeling a bit embarrassed about it? And the good thing is we've learned in the community because we see it all the time, people who are kind of a little bit quiet about it start to then be like, this is wonderful and are okay about sharing it the way you have.
Yes, totally. You can see them change, can't you, over the months? You can see them change and, you know, just get more and more vocal about it. And it is, it's really, really nice. But it's almost like you want to, I mean, people obviously will do their own thing, but when you know how good you feel, you just want everybody to feel that, don't you? If you see somebody with a hangover, inside my mind, I'm thinking, don't say anything. But inside, I'm thinking, oh, I'll just give it a try because it's so good and you'll never have to feel like that
Yeah, exactly.
I'm
again.
grinning
So
because
good.
I'm thinking about my sort of early. The reason I said, you know, good and the bad when you describe OTI, Becky, is I remember my early days in the community and I was nervous. I was like a rabbit in the headlights. I felt really self-conscious and I felt quite sort of apprehensive every time I went on. I felt like I'd failed somehow, if you know what I mean. I was in this community of people who I'd never met in my life, and it just felt like a, I don't know. I knew it was the right thing, but it felt really uncomfortable. And I suppose it's just those early days, maybe those first few days and weeks when you're finding your feet. It's just quite a, even though everyone's very welcoming, it's just working out how it all works is just a little bit unusual, isn't it? But I think it changes. But I think just when you do join a community, I think it is inevitably, I guess, it's just a little bit awkward at first, isn't it?
I think it can be really daunting, particularly if, like for me, I'd never done Zooms. So the whole thing, the actual physical thing of how do I log on? What do people do? Do you have your camera on? That kind of thing. That's quite daunting. So I think I engaged with the forum first and, you know, felt comfortable there. And then I came on the Zooms and I think it was a bit like ripping the band-aid off for me. I thought, right, let's just have camera on and speak because I'm one of those people that if I put something off, I get more and more anxious about it. So I'll either just go on there and completely mess it up and then just never go on there again, or I'll go on there and it'll go really well and then I'll do it on a weekly basis, which is how it went.
As I said at the start of this chat that I thought that a good sort of thing to focus on today would be how you have sort of given it your everything in terms of, like you just said there, the forum and the Zooms and the events and everything. You've kind of you've really been involved, haven't you? You've not been on the periphery constantly, I would say, for the last, you know, certainly 23 months that I've known you, you've consistently been on the Zooms, you've consistently been posting in the forums, you know, both with your own feelings and with your own learnings in inverted commas, and also giving advice to sort of everybody else as well. And, you know, I could waffle on, but I think, you know, A, that's to your credit, and B, I think that's kind of, it helps the community when people do that. But also, would you agree that it also, it creates your sort of thrust behind what then works for you by giving it your all? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I had to submerse myself in everything alcohol free. I had to. Yeah. So it couldn't just be a little thing I dipped in and out of, because then it would be really easy to just go back to how it was before. So I really needed to invest a lot of my time and energy in really normalizing the conversations and being open. I mean, I've spoke about it on a Zoom, but I wrote a list of behaviors and thought processes that I felt indicated that I should take a break from alcohol. And I wrote them out, and I bang on about that. I'll often like mention that, because I just think for anyone else, it's a really useful thing to do. Particularly if you're trying to explain to other people that, you know, you need to take a break and why you're needing to take a break. So I put that on the forum, or little, anything I think of, really. I always think it's welcome to share. Like if people are in the early days, I used to make myself go through the alcohol aisle at the supermarket and imagine crowds cheering me if I could get to the end without picking up a bottle of wine. It what? Sounds bonkers, but
oh, no, I love it.
Yeah. And so I'm sure I remember putting that on the forum at some point. Like, just imagine that you, when you get to the end of the aisle, if you've got nothing in your hand, you've literally winning. Imagine everybody cheering you on.
Love it. I was hoping you were going to mention the list, because when you told me about that, I was like, that is amazing. I think it was not that long ago, actually, I heard you talking about that on a Zoom. Yeah. And I just thought it was a brilliant idea. It wasn't just like top level wise. It was like all your feelings around it, which I just thought was amazing.
There was so, and the crazy thing was that that list, I thought I was just going to write down a few things just as a reminder for reasons not to go back to drinking. But I got to about point, I had so many points on there that I suddenly thought, oh, okay, this is a great list to keep. And I think at the time when I was writing, it was a good one to just look back on. I don't need to now. I don't look at it anymore, because I'm just beyond that bit, or I feel like I'm beyond that bit. But at that time, it was a really good reminder of, oh yeah, I used to do that. Or, oh yeah, I used to think this, because it's really easy to forget what your thoughts and behaviours were around it. And also at the time of writing it, I gave it to my husband to read. And I think if you've got a list like that, and people in the family, and I mean, my husband's always been really supportive, but not everybody's people around them are, and they might say, well, what do you want to do that for? But if you've got a list that explains what your thought processes were or how it made you feel, and you feel confident enough to let somebody read that, let them into your mind just for a bit to read it through, then they get it and they understand what your headspace is like. And I always think that's a good thing to do. I think if anybody has time to sit and just do that, because it helps you if you need to look back over it, if you're having a wobble or you've got fading effect bias, what a great way to remind yourself of what it was like. Read everything in your own words, or share it with somebody else so that they can understand why it's so important to you to not drink.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I think it's a great idea, not only so that you can look and see how far you've came and have that reminder, but as you say, to let your loved one, someone, your family, friend, circle, see actually how it makes you feel so that they can understand it and then give you that support. Because like you say, from the outside, your drinking looked absolutely fine, because it wasn't that much. It wasn't any more than anyone around you.
That's it. But to me, it was an issue. It was causing me problems. Yeah. And I knew that I wanted to at least take a break. And obviously, once I'd taken a significant break, I knew I just wanted to stop, because life was so much better. Why would I want to go back?
Can we talk a bit about some of the, we'll break it down into well-being. Don't we? We talk about a lot of like diet and exercise and well-being things within alcohol and censored. And that's a big sort of wrapper for mental health, if you like. And I think that's something that you've kind of really jumped in with both feet, haven't you, in terms of some of the things that we kind of focus on within there. We talk about being honest and open and sort of, you know, being your authentic self and stuff. And now that we're doing these podcasts, I'm conscious that at some point, if these take off, there'll be people who know me from my outside world start listening to these and go, Who's this bloke who I think sounds like Ian Thirlbeck, who's now talking about things like well-being and stuff like that? But you know, but it's all about being authentic, isn't it? So I'm owning it. I'm owning it. Like, but we do, don't we? We talk about well-being quite a lot. We talk about mindfulness. We talk about meditation. We talk about journaling, and we talk about, again, I'll use a broad word, spiritual things that kind of sort of, you know, work well with maintaining a healthy mental health. And you've grasped all that. And I don't know whether you always did have a bit of a handle on that or whether you were new to it all. But I think particularly in the last 12 months, it seems to have moved on, doesn't it? I think, do you mind just talking a little bit about that?
Yeah, totally. Well, I think after the first year, I think my first year was all about just not drinking. But the second year, that's a lot easier. So you kind of think, right, now what do I want from all this? What do I want to do now? And you got me started on the meditation, Ian, because you mentioned the app, the meditation app. So I thought, right, I'll give this a go. And sporadically done that. But recently, we've had a lovely friend of ours put a challenge forward, did we not, to do the 31-day meditation challenge. And I thought, well, this sounds good. This is going to really make this consistent because I'm a bit sporadic. So I thought I would do it with my children. I thought they're only little meditations. I think they're like 6 or 7 minutes a day. And I thought, right, starting 1st of January, I'm going to do this meditation challenge. And we've done that. And it was just a joy. It was so nice to do it with my kids. In the evening before bedtime, and it started off with them being a bit giggly, and you know, I thought, oh, this isn't going to go well. But within a couple of nights, they were totally into it, and they clamber into bed and say, right, we're going to do the meditation. I'm like, yeah, this is great. And we'd set it off, and it's just a lovely, lovely end to our day. And we've kept it up beyond that, and I shall do it every day, I think, forevermore, because it's so relaxing. And for someone who's got a busy brain, it's really nice to just have that little calming session at the end of the day, and to pass it on to my children as well. I mean, they're only 10 and 8, so if they keep this going, and full disclosure here, I went away for a couple of days and didn't do my 2 days of meditation, but when they came back from their grandparents, they had done theirs on both nights. So I let the side down, they kept it going. And then last night, my 10-year-old actually recorded his own meditation for us to do, which was just brilliant. Honestly, I was just so touched by it. He came down and he said, I've done a meditation for us today. And it was really good. It was great. You could tell that he does regular meditation. And I thought, oh, this is so good to share this with the kids is just lovely. And I wouldn't have been doing that if I was, you know, rushing them through bedtime and heading downstairs. We wouldn't be having this lovely time to just connect at the end of the day and, you know, teaching them some really good habits to wind down and, you know, get some headspace. So that's been a really positive one. But yeah, like with the yoga and exercising, I mean, we're on WhatsApp groups, aren't we, where everybody's commenting all the time. But again, it normalizes it and it becomes part of your day to day. So I've joined a gym in the last 6 months. I go to yoga classes, Pilates, you know, all that stuff where you think, oh my God, there's another person that doesn't drink and they're doing all this stuff. And I am one of those people. Who'd have thought? I mean, I don't even recognize myself. It's crazy.
Do you know what, Becky? I was looking at Ian on the camera and I also look at myself, and we're just smiling the whole time when you were talking about the kids, because what a wonderful gift to pass on, like what a wonderful learning to pass on to the kids at such a young age. And it's like you say, you would have missed all that just for a glass of wine. Do you know what? And even if that's the only thing you got from removing alcohol from your life, even that's just, that would be enough, wouldn't it? Just pass. I mean, that it's such
Totally.
special memories. It actually makes me emotional when you're talking about it, because it's just so lovely. I think that just sums up a massive benefit of removing alcohol from your life, especially when you've got kids.
These conversations that we have, they're all about stopping drinking. The people who we've been talking to, like Becky and everybody else, Kelly so far, are all quite well down the line. And we talk about a lot of sort of mature benefits, if you know what I mean, of not drinking. And I think we need to bring it back to sort of talk about some of the early days and stuff. But I think what's coming out of all of these chats is kind of, it starts with stopping drinking, but it's then what happens after that. And I mean, I suppose you may have looked at the meditation, and you may have encouraged your children to try meditation, and you may have done yoga, and you may have been to the gym, and you may have done, but the chances of it, I think, are a lot less until you take that first step in the right direction towards getting the life that you kind of feel that you want, but you don't quite know what it looks like. But to me, it starts with stopping drinking, if that makes sense. And we can't say with certainty that all these things come from not drinking, but I think they do. Would you agree? What would you say to that?
Yeah, I would totally. I haven't done much journaling, but I remember finding a journal entry from before I stopped drinking, and it had made reference to how happy I was, like what a lovely little family life I have. I'm very fortunate, a lovely husband, lovely children. And I'd put a comment in there saying, "But when I look at in the mirror, I don't know who I am anymore." And I picked it up a couple of months ago, and I thought, "Oh, well, that's an old journal." And I picked it up and I read that, and I thought, "Wow, that's what I've got back as well, is
Yeah.
that I know what I like, I know who I am, and I trust who I am." And that has definitely come from not drinking, because now I have time. You just have that time to really explore how do I want to be? Who do I want to be? What's important to me? And you're able to focus on that, because there's nothing else clouding your mind, is there? You're not feeling hungover, I'm not feeling anxious anymore. So I've got time to just put things right and to make everything okay again. And that's how I feel. I look in the mirror and I think, I know who I am, and I really like who I am. And I don't mean that from a conceited way. I just feel very content with who I am as a person.
When you see your children sort of, taking up meditation at that age and doing their own meditations and really sort of getting stuck into something, that must be just, well, so rewarding is not the word. The rewarding doesn't do it justice, does it? Just
Yeah.
so, just feels so right, doesn't it? It's lovely.
It's just the world, really, isn't it?
It
To
is, it's
give them
everything, isn't it?
healthy habits and anything like that. I just think that's all I want to do for them, is to put things in place that hopefully will help them for years to come.
Yeah.
Just when we're talking about the kind of changes you've made this year in terms of joining the gym and your yoga and your Pilates, you've signed up for a challenge as well, haven't you?
Oh my gosh,
Or
yes.
Beaver
Yes.
Castle in July.
Yes.
Yes.
10K. Yes.
You've got that to look
Which is
forward to.
sounding very daunting right
Yeah.
now. Yeah.
But look at, when actually just take a step back, actually, we did the 75 hard in the community, and you chose to do the 75 soft, which is, I mean, we call it 75 soft just because it doesn't go along with Andy Frizzella's rules. But I mean, it's quite a lot, it's quite a commitment what you stuck to. And I think previously you said you would only stick to it for, I don't know, less than 2 weeks. Is that what you said before? Yeah. And how's it been going?
Well, it's up and down, Kelly. I
Yeah.
certainly did more than 2 weeks. So I
Yeah.
think I certainly did 4 or 5 weeks, 4 weeks, spot on. Then it was a bit wayward. But I said at the start of the 75 soft, what my real aim was to end up coming out the other side with some consistent habits that I could continue beyond that. And I have got that, at least. So it's not spot on. I'm not adhering to every rule that I set myself on the 75 soft, but I have got really consistent habits as a result of that I can continue through. So far, I'm really positive about that.
And as we say all the time, progress, not perfection. And I think that's important to say, that when some people see kind of the fitness challenges and things that we maybe post in the community, it's your own challenge. So it's like when I started it as well, I started the 75 hard because, as usual, overconfident, and I lasted about 6 days. But the bits that I wanted to get out of it, I think it lasted 8 days actually. Give myself an extra 2 days. But the biggest thing I wanted to get out was more stretching and reading, because I keep starting reading and then not following through with it. And I read a full book in January. Well, leading into February, it took me like 6 weeks to read it. But the point is, I've read a full book and I'm halfway through another one this year. So that's a win for me as well. And I think that's the thing about the community. It is a comfortable place where you'll get encouragement. It doesn't need to be a big challenge. It's just about kind of little incremental improvements that you want
That's
to achieve.
100%. That's it. And you've done really well on your book. Well done.
Thank you. Can't believe it. Can't believe it.
Because that's another thing about the community. We've got the book club as well.
Yeah, we have.
And
And
I'm
I.
loving that because I'm reading books I would never read that would not be on my radar at all, and I'm loving them.
Well, I joined it for the first time this month. Well, January was the first time I joined book club, and I was like, check me out, joining a book club, reading books without pictures. And it was, I hadn't actually finished the book yet, but I thought I'm still joining. So I found out what happened in the book before I finished it, but I still finished it. But I loved it. The conversation was just, it was so interesting. And then this month's book is just like, I'm all in, I'm absolutely loving it. I can't wait for the conversation. So that's something new for me as well, which is
Yeah.
just amazing.
And that's what I mean. You see, we all get all this wonderful input from all the other members of things that aren't on our radar that we don't know about or we wouldn't necessarily do. And we're just growing all the time, aren't we? Did I read that you paired back your social media activities or come off entirely? Is it, where are you with that at the moment? Are you sort of, are you still on with that or what's Oh,
happening
I'm
there?
very much still on with that. So I was only on Facebook and Instagram. And so I've deactivated them, deleted them from my phone. I said I was going to do it for the 75 days of the 75 challenge. So I don't know what day we're on now, but yes, they are still deleted. I've not been on them. I have a few twitchy days where you think, oh, I'd really fancy having a good
I
scroll
need
through
to
that, but I haven't done it. I haven't done it because it's not on my phone. I thought, no, I will see this out to the 75 days. So yeah, and it's nice. It frees up time. And it frees up just headspace. It really does. It's just, I'm not sure I'll even go back to it, to be honest. I'm not convinced I will. So if I feel like this halfway through, then who knows, I might just ditch it all together at the end of it.
There's a lot of sober accounts on there as well. So I think in the early days when you're going alcohol free, it's really good, it's really useful. But this month's book is Dose, and there's a quote in it that I loved yesterday, and it was, happiness equals reality minus expectations. And I think we have, when you're on social media, it's that whole comparison is a thief of joy. You're comparing yourself to things. And in actual fact, if you just take all that out and just be happy with where you are in life and be grateful for where you are, it's so much more peaceful.
Yeah, it really is a lot easier to be in the moment when you're not looking at what everyone else is doing, isn't it?
Exactly.
We've covered so much tonight in terms of sort of all the things that you do now in terms of not only are you a mum, you've got a hectic life, you've got but all these things you've kind of picked up as life's gone on. What does your husband think of Becky version 2.0?
Says I'm a lot calmer because I'm not feeling anxious. So I'm a lot more balanced. My mood, not that I was moody, but I was either up here or down low. I was either sky high or really low. Whereas now I'm consistently in the middle with, a little variation. And I'm normal after all. I'm human after all. But yeah, a lot calmer. And he's really proud of the fact that I've not drunk because I think, after showing him the list, he realized how important it was to me and how my headspace had been. And then I think he was very proud that I'd managed to do it because I was able to then say to him, this has been really hard. So yeah, and I mean, he barely drinks now because obviously he's lost his drinking partner, and it's allowed me to see how uninterested in alcohol he is. We've just been away for the weekend. Neither of us drank for the whole weekend. We go on holidays. He doesn't drink when we're away, anything like that. So I suppose even from a health point of view, I hear him quoting things like, "Oh, the health hazards and things like that." I suddenly hear him make reference to one, and I think, "Oh yeah, you're taking that in as well." And you don't realise that everybody around you is taking in what you're saying, what you're sharing, and it filters out everywhere, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah, I think he prefers me this way, I would say.
And how nice for your children as well, that sort of, the age they're at now. Not that you were a big drinker in terms of, not that we define, what big and small drinking is, but your children will not remember the things that bothered you to make you want to stop. They'll only remember the Becky 2.0, won't they? It's
That's it.
isn't that
That's
nice as
it.
well?
Yeah. In fact, if we're out for dinner or something like that, and I'll have like an AF beer, and they'll say, "Oh, that's not got alcohol in it, has it?" And I go, "No," and they're going, "Right then."
They're really funny.
It's so nice as well, though, that they'll grow up not thinking, oh, you need to have alcohol if you go out for dinner. Because we were all brought up, like, if it's a party, you have a drink. If you go out for a family meal, you have a drink. And they'll grow up and that just won't be a thing. They'll see
No,
other people do
and
that.
that's where you know you want to, you go out and you have a few drinks because you want to be funnier or louder or more party-ish or things like that. And I hope that what they see when they see me is that it's okay to go out just as you are. We don't need to be any different because we're just fine as we are. We don't need to do anything, take anything, drink anything because we're already okay. And if they get that message, I'll be absolutely thrilled.
Yeah, they'll see you being consistent. The mum they know doesn't change. She's not sort of crotchety and angry and short-tempered and anxious and irritable. And then when she goes out, suddenly she's happy and laughy and giggly. And then she's emotional and she's angry and she's fighting. And then she's subdued. And then she's tired. And then she's grumpy. She's just, from the minute she gets up to the minute she goes to bed, she's the same person. And that enables them to be confident in who you are and who they can be, if that makes sense as well. It's sort of. It gives them a solid foundation, doesn't it? If you know what I mean, it's lovely.
I think so. I think so.
I think a big thing about the community as well is that it helps us all be more open about it is difficult when you're trying to remove alcohol from life. This is difficult to deal with. That's difficult to deal with. And I think it gives us the confidence to know that it's okay to have had those feelings, to then pass that on and have those conversations with family members and our kids and people around us. So that if they do, if there is a time where they come and they, a family member or our kids feel a bit kind of social pressure, those conversations are okay to have because I think for many families and for a lot of people growing up, they're conversations that don't be had. Whereas I think in this space, we all grow in confidence together and talking about that and knowing it's okay. And I think that's the next thing that we can pass on in a ripple effect in our family and friends.
That's it. And just learning to sit with the discomfort as well, isn't it? This today is hard, today is uncomfortable for whatever reason, but we are going to get through it. We don't have to do anything to, to squash it down. It's okay to just let it out. We're just going to talk about it. We're just going to feel it. And then, tomorrow, hopefully we feel a little less uncomfortable, but we've just got to work through it. And I think just accepting that some days are tough, some days are hard. It's not always easy, but we can do it. We can do hard things, can't we?
Becky, last question for me. If people are listening to this and they aren't part of the alcohol and sensitive community, and a bit like you might have been 2 years ago, thinking about joining a community like this, what would you say to them to try and sort of put their minds at rest that it's not full of internet weirdos and actually it's a really good sort of community to be involved in? What would you say to that?
I would just say give it a try because it's a place of real understanding and real acceptance and friendship. As you get to know people, the love that you have for everybody in the community, it sounds crackers, I know it does if you're not in there, but honestly, everybody cares about everybody so much. And with every new person that joins, they are welcomed immediately, and everybody's rooting for you. Everybody understands how uncomfortable you might feel. Everybody wants to make you feel comfortable and accepted. And there's just no place like it. You've just got to give it a go. It's just worth that fear. It's just worth feeling the fear and doing it anyway.
Exactly that. Somebody in the community coined it, and I'm not going to swear because I'm professional to the end, Kelly. But somebody said there are no D heads in Alcohol Uncensored, and I think that's generally true, isn't it? And we've got loads more people who are in the community who we can introduce to people and share their stories like Becky's done today, and we can get plenty more guests on to talk about all the things that we want to talk about as well. There's no D heads amongst us, is there?
There's not. And we're really lucky as well that there is quite a few people in there that are well on in their journey and they've got there because of community. So they completely understand if it's people that are at the start of their journey, you've got people in there like Becky and like other people that have been through every step that you're going to be going through. Not exactly because life's different, but they've been there, they've had the feelings and they've got the advice and support to give you. And I think that's wonderful as well. In that sense, we're really lucky.
Yeah. Becky, there's one more thing I wanted to ask you, which is a bit of an open question, a bit of a strange one, but you said year two was all about the well-being and the spiritual side of things and sort of doing things that you wanted to do. Where's year two taking you, if you know what I mean, in terms of where do you think year three might go?
I honestly can't answer that one. I don't know because at the start of year two, I really didn't know how it was going to unfold. And like you said, right at the start, you think, well, I'm not sure it's going to be any better than the year I've just had. But you suddenly find it is. So I don't know. More of the same, I hope, because I feel in a really good place. So just building on the wellness side of it, maybe, sharing more of my story, being able to help people, that would be lovely because, I appreciate so much the help that was given to me when I first joined, back in the OTI days when I first joined on that. And it's just nice to be able to, help somebody else, isn't it? If there's anything I can say or anything I could do to help somebody get through those early months, because we've done the early months, I'm sure most of us have done them over and over again. It's not like we only did it once, we've all done it over and over again. So we really do understand. And if, maybe that's the aim moving forward, is to be able to help some other people. That would be good.
It's also a bit of a trick question. I think sometimes it's only when you look back. So when you obviously look back on year two and then you compare it with year one, it's probably only when you get to the end of year three and you look back and go, actually, this year I've achieved X, Y, and Z, and these things are a lot different. And I've grown again, if you know what I mean. I did the air quotes there because I'm conscious I say a lot of cheesy things. So yeah, all good. Oh, Becky, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been lovely talking to you. And
Yeah, that has. It's been great. And I'm so glad and very thankful that you came on. And you do give so much back to the community on the Zooms, as I say, like just sharing the fact that it was hard for you and that now it's a lot easier. I think it helps people feel a bit more comfortable and at ease when they are struggling. So thank you for everything that you do put into the kind of WhatsApp group and the community. And thanks very much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks, guys. I loved it.
Well, before we go, we need to talk about surely the price has gone up, Kelly. Surely we're not holding out with that same price as
It's
before. Can't still do that.
still a bargain. Still a
Same
bargain.
price. Flipping heck. How much is it now?
£19.99.
Righty.
And for that, you get into the community, you get the Zooms, you get the forum, you get an app that's a little bit dodgy sometimes. Need to speak to the IT person on that one, but most of the time it's fine. So £20 gets you into the community and Zooms every day. Get to chat to people like Becky and us and get support. And yeah, lots going on in there. If anyone wants to have a look at what's going on in the community, you can see a what's on calendar on the website, alcoholuncensored.co.uk. So you can see what Zooms we've got scheduled for the month. If you download the app as well, you can sign up to the free subscriber account and you can see a bit of what's going on in terms of the calendar. There's a blog in there. We've also got a forum in there as well that's open to the public. That's new, and you're free to post any questions you've got for community members or Zoom hosts in there. So, yeah, download the app or head over to the website and you'll get more information there. Or send me a message on Instagram or Facebook, and I am always more than happy to reply.
All right. Email address.
And the email address is team@alcoholuncensored.co.uk.
Brilliant. Great. Becky, thank you so much again. Really enjoyed talking to you. And I will no doubt see you in the community probably later on for maybe the 75 hard chat or no doubt sometime next week, if not. Well, yeah, thank you very much. And everybody, thank you very much for listening again. If you've got this far, you're a star. And we will see you in a week's time for episode 7. Bye,
See
everybody.
ya.